Welcome to the Working Within podcast, a podcast dedicated to your spiritual growth, well-being, and awareness. I'm Charlene, your favorite wellness podcaster, Scorpio, and Gemini. Keep listening if you're looking for an extra supplement to help you reflect on your relationship with yourself and others, or keep you inspired and fearless about the possibilities for your own life. This season, you can look forward to topics like self-esteem, body consciousness, astrology and daily life, empowerment, law of attraction, and so much more. All with the goal of keeping you inspired and in the know. For more information, you can always connect with us at the Working Within Instagram or our website, workingwithin.net, to see our service offerings. Thank you all for your reviews, likes, and shares. And if you'd like to become a monthly supporter, you can click the link in our episode description. We look forward to building a community with you. Hello, 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 Working Within family and listeners. And thank you for pushing play on another episode of the Working Within podcast. This week is a really exciting, fresh week for Working Within because we invited Efwa to come and talk on the show about queer identity, queer theory. Efwa is like pretty much a budding scholar at this point and is just a really cool Black woman, Black person who really intimately has unpacked her own queerness, her own identity, sexuality in a way that has really beget a deeper understanding of herself. And so for that reason, I wanted to invite her on the show to do a little bit of that with you all, you know, and a bit of binary destruction, honestly. Efwa does use she, they pronouns, and I think there's just a lot to be said, and that was said with between Efwa and I, about the current state of what we identify as hetero or normal and what it becomes queer, and how much more possibility there comes from queering identity, queering interests, queering sexuality. There's so much to queer, and I think this greater conversation we had around just getting rid of what is normal is really cool and almost like intellectually challenging because, you know, you can really debunk your whole mind if you want to, and Efwa would know this. But I think we get into a bit of that. I think we use the lens of Black woman and hip hop and then try to expand beyond that as well to just show nothing that we say is true or we understand to be true has to remain that way, has to remain as the single truth. And I think that's what we do a good job of trying to unroll for the listeners in this week. There are so many different expressions of gender, so many different expressions of music, personality. And actually, we disservice ourselves when we get rid of what makes us all unique, you know, what sets us apart from groups. What would it be like if none of us wanted to be part of a group? It was really cool to reflect with Efwa, because queerness is something I've recently accepted in my own life as well. And it just helps me feel more at home because I'm not fitting anyone's mold. And I hope, listeners, you, after this episode, feel like you have to fit someone else's mold even less. But let's just get into the conversation. So this week, I am so excited, podcast listeners, to bring this week's guest, Efwa, who will provide her own introduction. Efwa, could you please share with the listeners a bit about yourself, including your pronouns, your big three, astrologically, most important, actually, and then also the title of your thesis and... Perfect segue to what we were talking about today.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, about myself. Okay, my name is Efwa. I'm 22 years old. I graduated from WashU like Charlie here. I live in St. Louis currently, not for long because I'm moving. What else? Oh, my big three. Oof, my big three. I'm a Sagittarius sun. I'm a Libra moon and a Taurus rising. I'm a really interesting person. In short. And the title of my thesis was called Yeah, I'm Still That Bitch, But Now I'm Feeling Like the Man, How Black Women Queer Masculinity in Hip-Hop Music. Sorry. Because I wrote a lot of different things based on my thesis, and they all have different titles. So I'm like, which one is my thesis?
Yeah, y'all, we got a writer on the mic. Hello, writer Epa. Wow. Yeah, exactly. How Black woman, queer masculinity.
Oh, yes. Oh, and pronouns. My pronouns are she, they. I use she, her, or they, them, but, you know, I use both. Love them both, so I'm done.
Oh my gosh, y'all, I am so excited to have Epa on the mic. I think, you know, it's going to be a really good conversation. Like, I know Jelani and I had a conversation around fluidity, sexuality, and Epa here has, like, gone to the next level, okay? She has, like, written that academic and put it together to give us a masterpiece of a thesis in which she talks about how Black women really make a mockery out of masculinity. And I'm saying it in really simple words, but Epa is the master. I won't say master, like, to scare her, but it is really well-versed in this topic.
Thank you.
Oh, of course. Of course. Literally, of course. I'm wondering, and I'm sure the listeners are wondering, how the frick did you come up with that topic to write about? And where did that interest begin?
Yeah, I think, like, it's a really, okay, I'm going to be succinct because it can be really a long story, but basically I started writing, how did I come up with it? Well, I was in a fellowship called the Merkling Fellowship, and you get, like, you get into the fellowship around the same, like, it's like Mellon Maze, except it's a little bit more local and specific to WashU. So we start the same time, at the end of your sophomore year, and you start, like, kind of, you don't have to, like, start researching necessarily, but you kind of just start, like, thinking, okay, what am I going to write? Do I want to do a senior thesis? Everyone kind of does a senior thesis, and it's like, you don't have to, but most people are kind of in the fellowship to write a senior thesis. So I was trying to figure out something I wanted to do, and I really wanted it, as being, like, an African-American studies major, I forgot to say that, and kind of a design minor, and more like communication design, like, I've done a lot of different things. So I wanted to do something that kind of talked about Black culture, Black women, Black queer people, and, like, kind of also just talked about, like, Black culture through media in a way. I kind of started talking about Black romance movies in the very beginning of my research. I wanted to do this whole research project. It was a really long time ago.
Was it the Libra chorus? Okay, keep going.
No, genuinely. I want to do this whole research project about kind of Black women and how Black women and Black femininity and Black love is seen through 90s Black romance films, and, like, popular ones like Poetic Justice, Love Jones, Eve's Bayou, and kind of doing something looking at that. And then I realized, like, a lot of watching a lot of movies like that is, like, not a good way to, like, kind of, it's not a good way, but, like, I just didn't like the medium of movies, so I was kind of thinking of other types of media. And, like, I read this book that was called Black Women as Cultural Readers, and I'm kind of forgetting a lot of the book, but it was just kind of talking about the different ways that Black women are portrayed in different types of media, and, like, Black women's voices as, like, avenues for certain types of things. And, like, I took a lot of different classes, obviously, at WashU about that. One specifically with Dr. Williams. We love her. We love Dr. Williams so much. And then I started thinking about music, because I love music so much. And I kind of wanted to stick with the 90s, mainly because I love that time period of, like, Black culture and through media, specifically movies, music, TV, stuff like that. And so I was like, oh, I definitely want to do music, and I definitely want to do rap and hip hop, literally only because I love Lauryn Hill so much. It's not here because I'm packing, but, like, I have a Lauryn Hill vinyl. She's my favorite of all time. So I love Lauryn Hill.
Lauryn Hill is amazing.
You know, and people, there's people out there who think she's not amazing. So I just don't know why. But anyway, yeah, so I started talking about that with Lauryn Hill, and I just kind of wanted to talk about Black women and kind of sex positivity and sex positive messages through 90s Black rap and hip hop, specifically 90s Black rap and hip hop of Black women and Black female rappers, like Lil' Kim, Foxy Brown, stuff like that, and kind of like showing this idea of, like, sex positive music throughout history, since people were so, like, in a rage about Megan Thee Stallion when she first came out. And this was, like, a year before, like, WAP and everything. So when WAP came out, I was like, oh, this could have been a great thing I could have done. But it's okay, because, like, there's more research to be done, and other people got that, not me. But I stopped kind of doing that just because I wanted to do something that was a little bit less talked about and a little bit less discussed, and something that kind of grappled with like a bigger question of like not just sex and sex positivity and femininity and how we understand those things to be, or like how we place meanings to those things, but talk about the ways that Black women kind of queer gender in itself, and talk about the ways that Black women rappers specifically queer gender, and like I just wanted a way to talk about why Black women who rap is such a queer concept to people sometimes, more often than not, and queer in multiple senses of the word of queer, like queer being like all like the Young MAs of the world, but also like queer being completely changing what it is that a female MC looks like, or an MC period looks like, or a rapper period looks like. And just talking about like the idea of what it means to be a hard rapper, and why there's like, why being a hard rapper and being a woman are like opposites, and why sometimes to be a hard rapper, it's like qualified with the fact that someone's a woman, or why if someone's a woman, it's proven that she's more legitimate if she is a hard rapper, and like talking about like why gender is infused in all these things. Yeah, basically. So that's a roundabout answer.
Not roundabout, it's very intricate. Wow. I'm like sitting here like, whoa. Like I read the thesis, I'm still like, whoa, F. It's awesome, the work that you've done. And I think, you know, it's really important to name how, I think you communicated how flimsy constructs of gender really are. I'm wondering if you could say a little bit more about hardness and its, is superficiality too much of a word there? Or like,
superficiality is a word. It's a big word. I don't know if it actually exists, but it should.
So I guess through your research, you had to reconcile the whole fact that Black women can perform masculinity better than men can. Right.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Actually, can you just say more about that? Like, what was that process? Like, how you see it replicate in the real world? And like, basically, what I'm trying to say, gender is fake. That's all.
We're trying to say gender is so incredibly fluid that it doesn't even make sense how like rigid the binaries are, and how like we've been socialized to like see how rigid gender binaries are.
Yeah.
I think I've just kind of talked about this a lot, especially with my committee, because my committee was like a team of like amazing teachers and professors and scholars that like really supported me. And Professor Fenderson, Professor MP, and Professor Martin, they're all guys who like not just kind of gave me things to read or gave me things to kind of discuss with them, but they asked like me questions all the time, because I think that's how they understood is how I best like answered the things that I wasn't asking them or talking about, is just like always ask questions, and always say, how do you feel about this, how do you think about this, because like I have a lot of anxiety sometimes, so like trying to kind of present my ideas to a lot of people, it can be a struggle. So I think it was good to have people that I'm comfortable with, but good to have people who know how to kind of get around the ways that like my walls go up when I have anxiety. So they just like spent hours on the phone with me, like especially Professor MP, like, and it wouldn't even feel like hours. We would literally have a meeting for 2 hours and we would talk about like Megan Thee Stallion the whole time. And then it would make me think about a billion different things I could write about. And it was just like a really nice thing to have that support. But basically through those conversations with like MP, we would talk about how like, well, one, we would talk about how like, when I talk about things like power posing or even like tomboys or sonic disturbances, like I talk about and stuff like that, like these are just such like simple, like more or less simple ways, or like very recognizable small things that like people do or Black women do, and like because they do those things, they're like othered in that, like them doing that thing, like they're not seen as Black women. Like I did this whole thing for my capstone, which was like a tangent of my thesis about sonic disturbances, and like this whole video about Nicki Minaj and Beyonce, and like when they're performing and they're rapping and they're doing these things, like in that moment you have to acknowledge like the people like know that they're not seeing like Nicki Minaj acting like a stereotypical like cis heterosexual woman would act. Like she's acting like someone who's angry, someone who's like enraged, someone who's like theatrical, someone who's bigger than life, someone who is like I don't know, it's just like this idea that in those moments that Black women turn do things, like if you're posing a certain way, if you're dressing a certain way, if you sound a certain way, you don't sound like a woman, therefore you sound like a man, but you're not a man. So then that confuses people. And I think that I just wanted to talk about that. And I like started talking about that because of Young MA and because of like Debrat also, who have her shirt on, because, you know, I love Debrat. She's my fave. But like, I was talking about Debrat and how like Debrat, like after 20 years or however long
she's
relevant, like came out with her fiance. Mm-hmm. And it was like around the time that I started writing my thesis. And it was just this idea that like these women who were tomboys, who did certain things, who rapped about certain things, or who kind of were seen as like one of the guys in all their posses or whatever it is that they look like, kind of how they were characterized by people at the time, whether it's like, oh, she looks like a guy, or she looks gay, or she looks like a lesbian, oh, she's like, she dressed like hard like some of these guys do, or whatever it is, like she like talks about being a pimp, she talks about being a big baller, all this stuff. And it's like things that are stereotypical male or like masculine things that we've like assigned as like masculine social scripts for whatever reason, and she's doing it as a woman, and because of that, I don't know, it just makes her seem not a woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of talking just to say that like there's no reason to put so much, like, I don't know, I think it's all this talking and like all this like figuring out what it means, what does this mean, what does
that
mean?
Yeah.
Why does it mean anything at all? And like this whole idea, like when I was writing about it, it was just like this whole history of like all these different women in hip hop and all these different rappers and all this stuff and like that Black women have done since the beginning, like rapping about sex, rapping about like getting a gay, rapping about this, all this stuff. And people are acting like, one, people are acting like it's a thing that is just happening now within the past like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no. And then on top of that, it's like, why do we put so much pressure on, I don't know, women to stay in such rigid binaries when they're not going to anyway. And when they're not, then we're going to have to address it and talk about something else when it doesn't need to be addressed and talked about. Like, you could just let people act and present and be how they are, because that's what they already are doing. Most people being Black women in rap and hip hop, I guess.
Oh my God. Okay, sorry.
I'm just saying a lot of things. But like, it's like stuff, it's like, that's my thought process as writing this. And like, I tried to write it in different ways that like made sense with the literature I was writing, because like writing a thesis, you have to like present secondary like reading and all this stuff, and I can't always use certain things, even though I use a lot of unconventional stuff in my thesis, like tweets and like documentaries. Like, I don't know if most people do that or if they just kind of stick to the books and like academic journals, but like I just wanted to present in a way that was like okay enough to be like pass my defense and be like academic work, but also like just talk about relevant things in ways that people can understand that don't have to go to college, you know?
Yes, I know. And it's so appreciated, and just hearing you talk about this has been awesome. Like, I love how you catch your flow and just talking about this, because I can tell you're really passionate about letting people be present,
you know? Yeah.
It's good. It's really important. And again, like you're saying, the binaries that we've taken so long to construct and uphold and add rules to are pretty much inapplicable. So I don't really know why we're still using them. But anyway, maybe to take a more personal turn, I'm wondering, this theme of queerness and all its glory and meaning, and also just in thinking about queerness versus like accepting binaries, what has been your experience either navigating a binary that you felt, you know, you were having to oscillate opposing poles for, or and actually your experience then saying F the binary and I can be who I want to be?
Right. It's hard because like growing up, like, I don't know, I feel like being raised as a Black woman, it just like in a lot of different climates where you're not, where you're like the only Black woman, feels weird sometimes. And like weird that like makes you question everything weird.
Yes.
And then like
Yep.
Then you're just like, I don't know what anything is. Like, I don't know
who I am at all.
Who I am at all. It's like confusing. Yeah. I think like everyone knows, like at least from WashU, you know, so like I'm from Dover, Delaware. And like from, like, I think the only time I was in like a school setting or like a large setting with a lot of people and kids my age that were also Black was when I was in summer camp, because my dad works at an HBCU, and I used to go to their like preschool and kindergarten. So a lot of professors, their kids go to the like preschool and kindergarten and everything. So there's like almost all Black children there. And like those summer camps would be like a lot of Black children. So those are the only times I was really around like a lot of Black children. Like I live in the country. Cause people don't get what Delaware is really sometimes, or Dover. Let me tell you, Dover, Delaware is country. There are literally horses on either side of me. Oh, there's horses on either side of me. So it's like, I don't know, going through things that are like stereotypically like young girl things has just been so weird. And also weird when, like, no shade to my parents, but like my parents don't or didn't talk or wasn't like as open talking about some things, like talking about like my puberty, talking about like my period, stuff like that. It just was like so taboo that it just made me deeply uncomfortable to talk about it, therefore made me deeply uncomfortable with the parts of me that are supposed to be feminine. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, like, sexuality is also to be added to the conversation because,
yes,
because like there's just so much already being, you're just already like having an uncomfortable experience.
Yeah. You know,
like, especially people who have like body dysmorphia, which like I really suffered with a lot of different things with my body and like my body image, and not even just like being happy with my body, but like being comfortable in my body. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't think people know how like weird it can be if you have problems, or not problems, if you have like an innate kind of different experience than people who are being like cis heterosexual people or like heterosexual people, whatever it is, like being someone who's like very, very queer in a place where everyone around me was very, very straight. And like the only queer friends I had, like I had later in high school, and I realized we're all very queer people in my friend group, or we're all very like gay or like not straight people. But like up until then, having like really straight friends and like being around a lot of straight people, it was like weird to navigate your sexuality, therefore weird to navigate your gender. But I feel like the parts of me that like kind of were named for me in terms of gender and sexuality, or gender and sex, I should say, like being a woman is something that I still feel like I'm connected to, just because of how I've kind of learned womanhood through like being Black, being a Black woman, being Ghanaian, being a Ghanaian woman, having my name be Efwa, which is like a female name for a girl who's born on Friday. Mm. Those are things that, like, even though they are kind of declaring a female or whatever, like whatever it is, female or woman, I feel like those things are a part of me because they're a part of me, not because they have like a gendered meaning to them. But like, I think after a while, I just stopped trying to make sense of like what means you're a woman, what means you're a man, what means you're not those things, or what means you are every of those things. Mm-hmm. I feel like it just is always up to the person who's experiencing it. And like me, I know that I have a connection to being a Black woman, I know that I have a connection to being feminine, and I know that I have like also a big connection to being very like masculine too, in like a lot of ways that have been decided for me a lot of the time, and a lot of ways that I personally decided to make for myself. Because like, I think this is something we kind of talked about, or you brought up when you were talking to me about this podcast, but like even this thing about like how people sexualize Black women.
Yes.
Like, it's not even just a way, it's not even just like how you hypersexualize Black women. Like a lot of people see Black women as like just sex objects,
or
on the other spectrum, like very hyper masculine, almost like unhuman, beastly things. And it's just like, I don't know, Black women have always just kind of been hyper sexualized in a way that's like really, really, really f-ed up. And I feel like because of that, it's f-ed up how I can see myself and how I can be comfortable with myself and my sexuality. So the way to get out of that is to just stop listening. Just stop listening and listen to yourself, because I feel good when I no, I do certain things, and I'll just keep doing those things.
Yeah. And Effa, you've been on a journey, man. Like
a journey. You know, I think you know of like a lot of people. Cause like I feel like even though we're not like very, very, very close friends, I feel like you really see the road I've been on. Like yeah. I feel like when you first met me, I was a completely different person.
Yes, and exactly.
I think everyone can agree. And I think that just has to do with the fact that I'm a Sagittarius. I'm sorry. We're gonna change a million times. It's gonna happen. We're not going to say the same person for as long as you know us. And it just won't happen.
You're on your journey for life. You know that, right? Like, you're stuck for life on your journey. I'm so sorry.
Right.
Faith into the ends of the earth to find your truth. That's what Sag does.
That's what Sages do. And it's tiring. But, like, I feel like it's also rewarding. Because I feel like kidding sometimes when I'm just, like, I'm literally a new person, like, every other week. But, like, I think I just, like, am getting more comfortable with being who I am every like day that I keep going. And I feel like it seems to a lot of people like who knew you at one point in your life, it can seem like a lot of change, but I feel like there's people who see it as extreme change and there's people who see it as you coming into yourself.
Yeah. So
I feel like people who see it as you coming into yourself, it's nice to acknowledge those people.
It is. And what are some of the stories you've had to undo for yourself to go through these changes to become more of who you are? It's been wonderful to watch.
Literally. I think one of them is having to do with my sexuality, because I, like, am now very comfortable knowing that I don't think, it's hard to say, because I feel like in every other context, I'd say, like, I'm probably definitely a lesbian, but, like, I feel like the more important part is that I know that I'm a lot gayer than I gave myself credit for when I was younger. I'm a lot gayer. Yeah. And like being comfortable saying that like out loud and being like comfortable telling people that and like not having to change who I am so people feel comfortable.
Right.
Nice. Because there's so many stories. Like I also based all of my experiences like in my academic like work, so all the stuff I've done for like African-American studies, like from my first day to my thesis, is like all stuff that's like about me or the things that I really love or my personality or my like journey. Like rest in peace Professor Duncan, because I love him so much, but I took his class and the construction and experience of Black adolescence, and I wrote this whole paper about the coming out experience for young Black queer adolescents, and you know, just like what it looks like to come out as a young queer Black kid and the problems of Black parents being so either like treating sex and gender conversation
as forbidden.
And like, or I also kind of hypersexualizing Black adolescents and like, especially young Black girls, and the problem with like coming out as a young queer Black person and those problems. It was just like a whole paper. And yeah. I basically like used a lot of research, but also used my own experiences to kind of tell this whole thing. And that's like one of the only papers that I got like literally an A+ on ever. And he was so sweet. And he was like, this is one of the best things I've ever read. Like, you need to enter this in things. I was like, oh, this is so sweet. And all I was doing was just really talking about my experiences. And it was nice that.
You have to keep writing.
I have to, apparently. So I shall.
But, yeah. Now I want to read it.
I'll send it to you. I will fully send it to you. I always tell this story to like my friends or like all my queer friends that I have. Like I always tell the story about like what I talk about in that paper and like experiences from when I was like, I don't know, maybe like 9, 8, and like very, very, very clearly I was like very gay or doing some gay shit, and like being reprimanded for those things and being like told that's not okay or being like made fun of for those things or like not being able to talk to my parents about those things. It's just been weird to like kind of go through that, but like now I feel like as a 22-year-old I'm very comfortable in like being very gay and being very queer and not being the seemingly straight person I thought I was like in the beginning of high school. So or even the beginning of college, honestly, because
oh my god, yeah, don't
coming
start.
Coming out is weird because I feel coming out is stupid. Anyway, tangents.
They're good tangents. We're recording a podcast episode. Okay. There are so many things I want to affirm. Black woman growing up without other black peers, lonely, resonates. Black woman dealing with parents, you put a bar on conversations about the things that kids need their parents to have a conversation about, resonates. And it's really important, and can create those disjointed relationships with like those most intimate parts of you. Mm-hmm. Black woman not realizing how gay she was.
Resonates.
Yeah. And I think growing up as a black woman can be really, really, really lonely is like what I'm hearing there and was my experience as well. And I think, yeah, similarly, when I came into college, girl, first of all, I was straightening my hair still. So that was just a whole I don't even have hair anymore. Like, anyway, it can really be an experience. And I think like part of it is, you know, as you said in your paper, you go and you talk about queerness and disidentification a bit. Mm-hmm. And it's like when you're thrown out to dry and like no one is like you in an environment anyway, you're going to queer it. And so that really resonates because I feel like everything I do is pretty anti when I'm around. So no, anyway, not really, but like it just feels different. It doesn't mean anything. The difference actually doesn't even mean anything. It's just people being. And it just happens that some people be similarly, but maybe that's not the case for everyone, and that's fine. And so I think a lot of what you're saying just really is people are being the individuals that they are, and they're coming into themselves, and that's totally fine. We don't need to label, assert, or pin things onto people.
Absolutely.
My question for you is, and this gets back a little bit back to your thesis as well, why is sex so central to everything? Like, why is it all that rappers, or not all, but why is it a big theme that rappers talk about? Why is it linked so intently to, like, your ability to be masculine or feminine? And obviously, I'm not asking you to, like, bring out sources, but, like, your perspective. And then, well, you can bring out the sources if you want. And also, like, why is it such a concern for, like, society? For instance, sexuality, like, labeling it, something we talked about a little bit already, like, why is it anybody's business? / it isn't, but anyway.
There's so many answers to that, but I think like the easiest or the shortest answer that I feel like I can think of is like sex and gender, or really just like sex is usually what people kind of refer to as like the main thing. It's so central because like people have made it so central, and like throughout history, sex has kind of been the thing to, I guess, differentiate people. And because of that, everything is centered around it. Like, if you're not this, you're this. Like, once that kind of binary was created, because I think that's something that people need to understand was created. Like, it doesn't even matter if, like, I don't think it matters exactly who you are, what you study. I feel like it's important to understand that how we understand the binary of, like, male and female to be was a construction, and a construction that we have continuously like that we've continued to uphold, and we've continued to validate, and we've continued to like set precedents to a new precedence, and like hold to a certain standard that we like all have to follow if you're this or you're that. And I feel like because of that, in short, like everything then becomes centered around it, because this is how women act, this is how men act, this is what happens to women at this age, this is what happens to men at this age, this is what women rap about, this is what men rap about. I don't know. It's like stuff like that. And it's just like the easiest
way to us.
You know, yeah, it was given to us, it was taught to us, and that's like all we have, so that's all we operate with. And it's like, it just, I don't know, it just sucks. I feel like when you put it that simply, it like kind of discredits all the things that do come along with, you know, how we are as different people. But like those differences don't need to be in a binary, and like they shouldn't be in a binary because they aren't in a binary. Because they just are not. And like, yeah, I don't know. There's the thing about like why that's a thing that like so many people rap about. I think the thing that's funny is like, I love the how people on Twitter, like my favorite thing is like when people are just like saying like that's all that certain people, like Megan Thee Stallion, or that's all Lil Kim when she was like popping or whatever, that's all certain people rap about. But it's just like, I feel like by them only rapping about it and doing it well, it's like the biggest like you to everyone who like says that's all you literally have as a woman. Like all the people that discredit you for being a woman and saying all you are as a woman is a woman, and them saying, well, if all you're gonna call me is woman and all you're gonna say is like things about me being a woman, things about me having a vagina or whatever, I'm going to use that, I'm going to like amplify that, and then I'm gonna like make money off that, I'm gonna get fans off that, I'm gonna get record deals off that, I'm gonna get Grammys off that. Okay. And you're mad for why? You're mad for why? It's like, I just feel like that's like the funniest response, because like in short, like that's just what it is. It's like the same way people get so mad at like Lil Nas X for being so so gay, so gay and so loud about it, like, because I just feel like that's all people have, like at some point that's all people like, that's all people say about,
that's about him.
Yeah, that's all people, that's the box that people put you in.
Yeah, he's like, too dynamic.
It's right. It's like, if you're going to put me in a box, I'm going to show you how dynamic I can be within this box. And then people get mad.
You can't put a box on anything, actually.
You really can't. You really cannot put a box on anything. And it's just so funny when people try to. And that's why I feel it's so funny to, I don't know, that's why it's so funny to me to see, like, not just, like, my journey and, like, my queer journey and my queer experiences being reflected in a lot of my favorite artists and a lot of like people I see, like friends, family, people in the media, or like artists that I love the work that they do or the art that they create. I just see myself in them so clearly, but like people who don't relate to that have such a hard time
conceptualizing.
Like, do y'all not see what I am seeing? Like, I think the best example, I talk about this all the time with every one of my friends, is Kehlani. Like, I feel like so many people, the more, as time progresses, people get more and more confused by Kehlani, and I understand her more and more. Like, all these other artists that I've been able to kind of, like, connect to on a deeper level, like, one of my, like, not new, I've liked her for a long time, but her, like, most recent album, her name's Ombre, her most recent album, Pope, is one of my favorite albums of all time. Like, I see myself in her so much, and, like, I see, like, her being friends with Kehlani and all these people that hang out together and all these people of these different identities or similar identities and people who hang out with certain people. I'm just like, I see myself in all these people and I understand y'all way more. But it seems like people who don't have that experience just want to put you in a box and continuously put you in a box. And I just don't understand how there's such an aggressive disconnect. Like, I get it, but I don't get it.
The aggressive disconnect is internal and it's just manifesting in this world.
Like, I can see, I feel like that's one of the reasons why I have certain people that I love and certain people that I gravitate towards too naturally. Like, I love all my straight friends. They're my besties. I love them. Like, there's certain people that I just gravitate towards, not for any other reason, but because they're queer and I'm also queer. And we just have similar experiences literally because of that.
Exactly.
And especially if they're Black queer women. Like,
exactly.
Then it's like, we have very, very similar experiences and I just want to know everything about you because you probably also know everything about me. Naturally, you know?
And we're back and forth to each other and that's scaring me. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, like, genuinely, that's, I don't know. That's how I always see things. And it's just so funny. Like, I see her and I see all these other people and all the people that I talk about, especially Debrat and, like, Young M.A. when I talk about, like, all these different people and all these different rappers who are very queer and who are very loud about their queerness and their gender fluidity and their very like clear masculine side and very clear feminine side, like all these things, I feel like I see it and I understand it and people get more confused. And like not all these interviews and things like from like the Breakfast Club, and when I have to like kind of provide evidence and talk about in my thesis, it's so funny to see what people say, especially like people like Charlamagne. Oh my goodness, it's so hard to hear these interviews because like you are literally just saying things, so you have no idea how to understand her experience as a Black lesbian. Like, you have no, you don't know, you don't get it.
Yeah,
as a straight man, it's like you really are so like, I don't know, she seems fake to you.
Yeah It's like a concept, like it's just an idea, and you have to, you're trying to like form some connection, but you can't because your experience is just so different.
Yeah, I was just me rambling about how confused I get about like cis heterosexual people trying to box queer people when queer people are begging you not to box them.
Yes. And we don't need to box any queer people. Queer people don't need to box. Yeah, there's a lot going on there. Ah, the masculine and feminine sides. Oh my gosh. That's something that really resonates. I like am so, yeah. Anyway, we don't need to talk about that. But no, that's been something I've
experienced. So what? Please explain, talk more. I would love to hear.
I was just going to say, I'm like so, I love, like I can't imagine myself without my masculine energy because I'm so, so masculine. And I didn't realize that until I started deconstructing my gender a little bit because I was, yeah, like my mom, she put me in those big fluffy church dresses, like even though I didn't like them, and like I would always lean tomboy, but like we would get that course corrected quick, like my mom's Libra, so, and I love her to death, like it's totally, like we reconciled that, but it's just funny as I reflect back, like I was always trying to lean even more into like the person I am now, I think, and so I think because I let my mind like unsubscribe essentially from the gender constructs that we have now, it's like I don't really give a shit. Like I cut my hair off because I'm tired of doing my hair and like I don't need
fucking hair off. And it looked good. And it looked good.
Thank you. Yeah, because I don't feel like doing it. And like, yeah. Anyway, so just those like sways of energy that can be portrayed like without having to be one or the other. Like I really find comfort in that middle line and just telling it and like kind of experimenting with that.
Very much feel that. Especially just because like masculinity and femininity, like when I talk about it in my like thesis, not to keep bringing back to that, but like when I talk about my thesis, it like I talk about it and like frame it in ways that like this is not me giving a definition to these things. It's literally me giving you a definition based on how we've been socialized to see feminine people and masculine people, femininity and masculinity. So when you really think about it, femininity and masculinity, if they're attached actually to your like assigned sex at birth, like then really they are just as fluid as how we like move between feminine and masculine and how easily it really is to move between feminine and masculine.
Because you're just an infant.
Yeah. You know, it's like it's really just like there's, I don't know, I just feel like for me, I used to like kind of be really hung up on the ways that I would be so like not feminine when I was younger and like be scared to use the word masculine because that felt like being a man and like that was a bad thing as a woman, so you shouldn't be a man as a woman and you shouldn't be masculine as a woman. But like at least the ways that I was really quite like very unfeminine, it's just like there's so many ways, and there's so many ways that I am very feminine, but there's so many ways that I also just don't care and I just want there's so many ways that I just want to like do the things that I do and look the way that I look and like feel the things that I feel and be with the people I want to be with because that's what I like and that's what makes me feel good. And I feel like sometimes explaining things simply like that makes people feel like, makes people think that like you're a child or something, or like you have to have specific language for all the things you do. And it's just like, I just don't think sometimes. Sometimes it is, because sometimes it's important to like stand in your truth. And sometimes it's important to say, my truth is something that you won't understand. So therefore, I'm saying whatever truth you want me to tell you.
It's so Sag Gemini right now. Okay, sorry. Yes, no, you're absolutely right. Also, when you said that point about like being afraid of being manly, I remember, this is so, you've unlocked a memory in my brain.
Oh my God.
I remember when I was younger, I looked up my name, my full name, Charlene, and I would look it up and it would mean manly. And I just looked it up again and it means free man. I used to be so scared of that. And keep in mind though that I was still like super aggressive workaholic. I was a workaholic since I was 4 years old. Like super aggressive workaholic. I was always called bossy, like all, you know, all of those traits of masculine energy, go getter, start your own stuff, like kind of domineering. Like, yeah, that was me from a very young age, but I was always afraid of that. And now it brings me great comfort. And like, yeah, again, my femininity, I can express in many ways when I feel like it, but like, I don't have to. And I also don't have to be just a guy either, because I'm not. And that doesn't resonate. So like, again, it's what we make it. Create your own roller coaster, and name meanings are important because it's right. Literally free man, yes. But
absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All right, last question. You have to ace it. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. What do you want the listeners to walk away from this episode with?
I think really to walk away with this, I feel like one, actually multiple things. First thing, do not do a thesis if you don't have to. do not do a thesis if you PSA, don't do a thesis if you don't have to, because these are cool and it's really nice to have a body of work that I can call my own.
Yeah. But
sometimes it's not worth it. I'm going to just be real. And depending on the school you go to, it's also not worth it. But if it is something like, I think with that, things you love to do, things you love to write about, things you love to talk about, find ways to like really express them and really put like a lot of your time and energy into it. Because even though I hated writing a thesis, I loved doing the research that I did. Like, mm-hmm. It was like the only good thing about senior year. I'm gonna be so real. Like, besides being with like my friends and like leaving, I feel like the only good part about senior year was being able to like do the research I did and like have something to show for it. So I think like the things you love to do, like do those things like fearlessly, because those are when you're like most happy. And why would you want to like not do things that make you happy? And also, gender is what you make it. It is okay to do what you want to do, because at the end of the day, probably someone else wants to do what you want to do. They just don't say it. And if we're not saying it, nothing gets done.
Nothing gets done. No, you're right.
Nothing gets done. Yeah, that's really all I have to say. But yes.
Well, Effa, thank you so much for joining the freaking show. Like, we are honored to have your scholarship. And I'm so excited for like the listeners to tune in and like follow your journey along, connect with you. Like, if anything Effa said like resonated with y'all like it did with me, make sure you reach out, because I'll include her social medias as she lets me in the episode description, so you can reach out. But man, isn't it so cool to like have a scholar on the podcast? We may have to do this before.
That is so funny. It is hilarious sitting with myself as a scholar, because I'm not going to grad school or anything. My academia stops here.
And that's okay. Still a scholar. Who said a scholar needs to go to grad school?
And you're right. And you're correct. And you are correct. Thank you.
Effa, super appreciate you being on the show. Like, it's been great to hear your take. And I hope the listeners like in these questions of like, why do I subscribe? Why do I assign labels? Because like, we don't need to. And that's that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of Working Within. We're ecstatic that you made it this far. If you liked what you heard, we'd really appreciate your reviews and shares. And if you want to become a monthly supporter, you can click the link in our episode description as well. As always, stay connected with us through our Instagram, working.within, and our website, workingwithin.net. We hope to see you again soon.